If you had a way to simulate the virtual world inside your computer that behaved and looked and sound realistic, and it could be done in real time on parallel hardware for the future, what would you use that for? Well, you could use it for all kinds of stuff. It's really the sky's the limit.
Real-time, lifelike, immersive experiences. This is Future Lab, the online radio series from Intel Labs. I'm Jason Lopez. Those 360-degree camera views you see on the internet right now are just scratching the surface. Visual computing is going to blow that away. Imagine taking a virtual 3D tour of Paris, creating a lifelike model of your home on the fly, or dancing in front of a screen that captures your moves and creates a virtual practice session to discuss with an instructor. These are a few of the potential applications of visual computing. This is a fast-growing field of technology that combines photorealism, HD video and audio, interactivity, and computational modeling. Deirdre Kennedy has this report.
In a computer lab at Cornell University, researcher Doug James spends a lot of time breaking things. Dinner plates, piggy banks, wine glasses. Those crashing sounds are part of a computer simulation that James and his colleague made to analyze how inflexible objects look and sound when they shatter. His team is working on ways to generate virtual sounds and movements that are just as believable as the real thing.
So if I have, a virtual object inside the computer, say like a virtual cell phone, if I move it all around, it should behave realistically. If I snap it shut, I should hear the correct sound, etc. And so being able to do all of that requires you to simulate reality, the motion, the visual, as well as the sound, all at once. And to do this in a way that doesn't require manual intervention. There's no time to go into a recording studio and record the right sound and stick it in time for the thing to show up at theaters. It's got to be done real time in the computer.
Right now, game makers and animation studios use graphics programs to create authentic-looking objects and characters. But those images are completely silent. The audio has to be recorded separately and then synchronized with the images in post-production. So in a film like Inception, computers can create visual effects like the city of Paris blowing apart, or millions of gallons of water spilling out of the air. But the accompanying sound still has to be created by people using recordings from nature, sound archives, or created in a studio. James's goal is to be able to generate those sounds on a computer in real time. So when the computer makes a bowling ball and rolls it into a glass coffee table, it generates the corresponding sound. James says sound has been a missing link in virtual reality in a lot of ways, and sound is a crucial part of how we perceive information.
Our brains don't process images and sound and touch and all these senses in a completely separate compartmentalized way. Our brains merge all these information sensory sources and build a picture or a model of essentially what we're sensing. Having second-rate sounds can actually, hurt things. By having realistic synchronized sounds, you can actually improve visual and temporal acuity, giving you a better understanding of what you're looking at. For example, if I have an object moving across a surface and it's making no sound, then you don't really know a lot about the surface, the way it's supported, or the object. But if the object is making some grinding sound, that tells you something. If there's a cracking sound, like something's about to break, that tells you something else.
And as any radio reporter will tell you, even recording sounds from real life can pose a problem because things don't always sound the way we expect them to. A crackling fire might really sound like raindrops on a tin roof. And a washing machine might sound more like an old truck engine idling. That's why movie sound designers often enhance sounds by giving them depth and reverberation.
Something like simulating water sounds is particularly interesting because it's so pervasive, everybody recognizes it, it's everywhere, but it's also very challenging. One of the things we hope to do in the center, the Intel Visual Computing Center, is to be able to simulate water visually and auditorially in a realistic way so that what you see on future displays will be indistinguishable from reality. I mean, just as a goal, that's an important thing to work towards because it's so darn hard right now.
James's work is part of a 5-year collaboration just launched by Intel to improve visual computing. Computer scientists from 8 top U.S. schools, including UC Berkeley, Harvard, Princeton, and Stanford universities, will tackle the specific challenges of recreating the physical world in a number of devices. Professor Pat Hanrahan is the center's chief scientist at its hub at Stanford University. He says the overarching themes of the project are people and places.
We wanted computers to be able to look at people and understand what they were doing, and also represent people and animate them and build virtual characters. And the same with places. We wanted computers to be able to scan in places, both buildings as well as cities, and be able to have people walk through them.
Hanrahan sees a day when people will be able to log into computer programs that provide completely immersive experiences of a city or place with human-like guides, kind of like The Matrix meets Inception. He says the goal is to make the technology simple enough so that regular, non-scientific people will be able to contribute to the knowledge base. One of the main challenges will be developing hardware and software that can select specific data or images and be able to interpret what they mean, like a camera with a brain.
It's about using cameras, range sensors like you might have seen on the Microsoft Kinect, which lets you get depth images of people and places, and assemble models from them. And the key thing we're trying to do is push computer vision to the next step, which involves understanding what the camera is seeing in some sense. For example, if I point a camera at you and you reach out and grab something, the computer wants to know that you're trying to grasp something. Okay, it's not just a matter of tracking your finger, it's knowing, say, what your gesture means or what you're trying to do.
He says there's still a long way to go in getting computers to understand context, and processing all that data will require a huge amount of computing power. To do that, the center is focusing on parallel computing. In the past, software programs relied on serial computation, using one main processor or CPU to complete one task at a time, and always in the same sequence. The bigger the task, the bigger the computer. UC Davis researcher John Owens is part of a team that's trying to find the best way to break up those big computing tasks and assign them to smaller parallel processors. He describes the difference between serial computing and parallel computing with a quote from the inventor of the first supercomputer.
Seymour Cray used to say, he was asked about parallelism, and he used to say, well, would you rather plow a field with 2 strong oxen or 1,024 chickens? And his answer was the oxen, and he built very powerful computers. You know, I side with the chickens. It's a lot of fun to side with the chickens. You know, it's hard to herd chickens, it's hard to make them do things, but if you have 1,024 chickens behind you, there's a lot that you can do.
In theory, a lot of chickens, or small processors, should be able to divide up a huge task and tackle smaller pieces of it. So one would manage the way the image is lit, one would maintain accurate shadows, while another might process shiny surfaces or transparency. But multiprocessing has its own problems.
One of the problems is what we call heterogeneity, that we have multiple different kinds of processors in our system. And specifically, most people have a computer that has both a CPU, a mainstream commodity style processor, and has a GPU, a graphics processor. And so one of the big questions is, which problems need to be run on the CPU and which problems need to be run on the GPU? And they're good at different things. The CPU is the 2 strong oxen and the GPU is the 1,024 chickens. And some problems are better for oxen and some are better for chickens.
And since the currently available graphics processors already contain a number of different smaller processors, he says, the big question for computer scientists is whether to distribute the tasks to a bunch of the same processors or a bunch of different processors.
Once you have a processor that might have different kinds of subprocessors on it, how do you give the right piece of work to the right processor at the right time? Nobody really knows the right answer to that yet. And the hard problem that we're trying to solve is, what is the right answer for that?
Researcher John Hanrahan says the drive for faster processors has been pushed largely by the public's demand for better gaming and entertainment experiences. But he says the new era of visual computing will provide much more than amusement. It could make it possible for scientists and engineers to explore topics they never thought possible and transform the way people learn about the real world around them. For Future Lab, I'm Deirdre Kennedy. Thank you.
That's our show for today. Future Lab is the online radio series from Intel Labs. You can find photos and resources for visual computing on Flickr. Just type in the terms Intel and Future Lab. Other Future Lab episodes can be found at iTunes and at connectedsocialmedia.com. And you can see what Intel Labs is up to at intel.com/research.